Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Details are emerging about a school shooting in Pennsylvania this morning that reportedly left the principal and a student dead. Mike Fetro of the York County Emergency Management said the shooting occurred in the school cafeteria. He added that no one else was injured, but there were others present.
Yeah, there were several students. This happened in the cafeteria. School was getting ready to start in the morning, but there were witnesses.
Hospital officials have told a local television station that Dr. Gene Segro, the principal of Red Line Junior High School, has died. Fetro says he is unable to confirm that report. The unidentified shooter, who was a student at the school, turned the gun on himself after allegedly shooting Segro. President Bush is in Ohio to promote tax cuts as the cure for the ailing economy.
One of the problems we face is not enough of our fellow Americans can find work. There's too much economic uncertainty today. And so 3 months ago, I sent Congress a package that would promote job growth and economic vitality.
Bush calls his proposal for a new round of aggressive tax cuts a jobs and growth package. The Ohio visit is seen as a not-so-subtle attempt to influence Ohioan Republican Senator George Vinovich. Senator Vinovich and Maine Republican Olympia Snowe were the key votes in recent Senate action to hold tax cuts to no more than $350 billion. The U.S. House has approved a $550 billion tax cut package. China has sealed off a major hospital in Beijing due to an outbreak of severe acute respiratory syndrome. No one is being allowed in or out of the 1,200-bed Beijing University People's Hospital. China's national number of SARS infections has ballooned now to more than 2,400, and the death toll has climbed to 110. Meanwhile, halfway around the world, Canada's largest city now has 16 deaths related to SARS. The World Health Organization has issued a travel advisory for Beijing and Toronto, but Canadian officials say that's an overreaction.
Let's read this one.
My favorite!
You want me to read your bedtime story? You have a bad headache.
Yeah, but I can't let it ruin our story time.
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache? Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
The
end.
Good night, big girl.
Good night, big guy.
Better headache relief. Advance to Advil.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it. Wherever you are, Allivert, use as directed.
U.S. forces have reportedly uncovered a Baghdad prison cell marked with the initials of missing 1991 Gulf War pilot Scott Spicer. Family attorney Cindy Lacadera says there's also been more information uncovered.
I can say it's to the point where I feel as if perhaps I should be over there looking myself. You know, it's we're anxious.
Lacadera speculates the top brass from Saddam Hussein's regime holds the answers. Lacadera confirms reports have placed him inside an Iraqi prison as late as this year.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Coalition forces have now pulled four more cards from their deck bearing the names of the 55 most wanted former Iraqi leaders. A handful more of Saddam Hussein's associates have now been taken into custody. One of them is Iraq's former director of air defenses. At number 10 on the Allied list, he is the highest ranking official found so far. The others captured include Saddam Hussein's chief of military intelligence, his former trade minister, and another Iraqi intelligence official. The man the Americans have chosen to lead the Iraqi reconstruction efforts says things in that country are moving forward as planned. Retired General Jay Gardner, though, says there's still no actual firm timetable for successfully reviving the war-torn nation. A junior high school student in Pennsylvania is dead today after shooting and injuring his principal earlier, before then killing himself. More on that story now from reporter Tori Gates.
Authorities say Red Lion Junior High School in York County is in lockdown after a shooting that left the school's principal wounded and the shooter, a student, dead. The shooting occurred before classes this morning. Details remain sketchy, but the unidentified student reportedly shot the principal, Dr. Gene Segro, then took his own life. Students from the school have been transported to the nearby Edgar Moore Elementary School and the senior high school. Segro has been taken to a nearby hospital. His condition is not known. Reporting from Harrisburg, I'm Tori Gates.
And more violence in the Middle East today. A Palestinian suicide
suicide bomber blew himself up, also killed a security guard and injured 13 other people. Happened at a central Israeli train station during morning rush hour today. That attack is casting a shadow now over Palestine.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Kids fight over toys, and mom says share. Good advice for the playground and the road. When I come back, we'll talk peaceful coexistence between cars and motorcycles.
We're at the track asking drivers why they recommend Champion Platinum Power Spark Plugs. Here comes Matt Kenseth and his Ford. Matt, why do you trust Champion? He said Champion provides long-lasting power. Here comes Dale Earnhardt Jr. and his Chevy. Dale said Champion has the right technology. So use Champion in your car no matter what make it is. Champion, the world's favorite spark plug. What'd he say?
Get new Champion Platinum Power Spark Plugs at a leading auto parts store or retailer near you.
Global detente's important, but drivers of four-wheeled vehicles and two-wheeled motorcycles could use some local negotiation in sharing the road. Here's a start. Cyclist, act like full-sized vehicles by claiming road space nearer centerline, encouraging drivers to pass with a wider berth. Four-wheeled vehicles, don't move to one side to see what's going on in slow traffic. Stick to the middle of your lane. This position discourages cyclists from weaving between cars. Now that's shuttle diplomacy. I'm Bobby.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hey, good. Hello today. This is Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from New Mexico to Alabama, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, covering North and Central America from Alaska to Panama, and streaming audio on the Internet with listeners from Europe to Asia. We're speaking about from the radical middle. For those of you who are new to the show, on my website at tomhartman.com, I say, you know, this show is common sense from the radical middle. I really believe that what we're the positions that we're taking, that the perspective that I'm bringing to this show, and that we're sharing, are those of the majority of Americans, of the archetypal, the core notion. The words right and left have been so abused that they no longer have meaning. But the average person, pretty much everybody in America, knows what they want and what's best for this nation. I'm calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less. Where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of, because that's just what you do. In a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness and not on materialism and greed. There's been such a strange shift in the values of the United States just in the last 20 years or so. And I think that most people view that, and you see it across the media, as kind of an alien takeover, where people could work to get ahead, but at the same time we didn't leave people starving in the streets. The news is the core of the show, but we're going to theme each segment or each hour around a particular question. The question we're going to be looking at in this hour of the Tom Hartman program is, what is the most healthy for democracy, that is, what's best for democracy, way of dealing with the reality that third parties always harm the party they're closest to in American democracy? we have this interesting situation in the United States, and a lot of people, you know, just they don't understand it, they don't get it. That, you know, what they look at the Green Party in Germany, for example, which is a significant party. They've got a good chunk of the seats in the Bundestag, in the parliament, and they think, oh, we can do that here. But the reality is that Germany has a proportional representation system, where if 30% of the people who vote for the Green candidate, then 30% of the people who show up in parliament represent the Greens. We don't have that here. We have what's called winner-take-all, first-past-the-post local elections or regional elections. So in the United States, barring that or instant runoff voting, which we'll get to in just a second, we have a situation where when a candidate runs for a third party, they will always harm the party that they're closest to. Now, this is not a popular truth. There's a long list of people who didn't like it. Teddy Roosevelt, H. Russ Perot, John Anderson, Pat Buchanan, Ralph Nader, all kinds of folks who have run as third-party candidates and ended up just kind of knocking the folks that they're really most politically aligned with in the mainstream, both on the right and on the left. But nonetheless, that's how our Constitution was written. Now, James Madison, back in Federalist Number 10, Madison and Hamilton, when the Constitution was put together back in the 1780s, they had to sell it to the American people. And Madison and Hamilton, by and large, they wrote about probably 95% of it, engaged in this kind of running dialogue. It wasn't quite a debate. In newspapers all around the United States that was called, ultimately, the Federalist Papers. And they didn't even overtly sign the papers. They signed them with a pseudonym, which I forget what it was. But anyhow, everybody knew what was going on. And in Federalist Number 10, it's a fascinating one to read. I encourage you to look it up on the Internet and read Federalist Number 10. This is stuff from the founding of America. And in that paper, in that article, Madison goes into this long screed about the dangers of factions arising. Now, in 1787, when this stuff was going on, there were no political parties. Even the Federalists weren't considered a political party at that point. Everybody considered them a Federalist because they themselves a Federalist because they were creating this federal government. And what Madison was warning about was that if factions, which later came to be known as political parties, if factions arose, that the electoral system, the voting system that they were putting in place in this Constitution, wouldn't be able to deal with it. That it could work just fine if there was only one party, that is, if everybody agreed and there were no factions, or if two factions arose, that is, two parties, it could function. But beyond that, it would start to break down. And Jefferson just kind of lays, or Madison rather, just lays all this out. Now, we have to give them credit. Proportional representation was not even invented. See, this was the first, you know, 1787 was the first crack at trying to do a representative constitutional democracy within a republic that had ever been done. You know, in Greece, they didn't actually vote. It was a lottery system in Athenian democracy. And so the closest model that they were using was the Iroquois Confederacy. And there were no factions among the Iroquois. And so this is what Madison was arguing against, that we shouldn't allow political parties to rise up. And, you know, you could say it was a mistake, but it wasn't until 1848, that John Stuart Mill wrote a book called On Liberty and a number of other papers. Actually, it was a booklet of his that preceded On Liberty, in which he proposed that a more democratic form of government would be proportional representation. And so most of the European democracies that came after the United States ratified our Constitution adopted John Stuart Mill's idea of proportional representation. So you go to the polls and you vote your party. You vote Green or Social Democrat or whatever it may be, and or the Tories or the Republicans or the Conservatives, and the percentage of people who vote for that particular party enables that party to send its representatives to the parliament. Well, we didn't do that here, and so we've got this situation where whenever a third party rises up, it harms the party of the two major parties that are closest to it. Unfortunately, we in the United States have a system that only allows for two parties. Well, maybe not unfortunately, but whatever. This is the reality. Now, Australia has the similar situation, and they dealt with it with a system similar to what's called instant runoff voting. And instant runoff voting is something that has spread across much of the United States now. Many states, many communities, it's mostly in local communities, are experimenting with it or using it. It's been in place in some communities as much as a decade. Instant runoff voting is where, for example, in the last presidential election, you go into the ballot, into the voting booth, and say you wanted to vote for Ralph Nader, but if Ralph didn't win, you really wanted Al Gore to become president, just for example, because that was the Republican Party wasn't split with a third party in the last election, but the Democrats were. Or it could have been George Bush and H. Ross Perot in the previous one, but let's work with this example. So you would vote as your first choice for Ralph Nader and as your second choice for Al Gore. They tabulate the votes, and if nobody gets a clear majority, more than 50%, then all of the people who voted in the first vote for somebody who was clearly not the winner, in other words, Ralph Nader got 5% or whatever he got of the votes, so they'd throw out all those Nader votes and they'd replace them with the second choice of everybody who had voted for Nader. So if you had voted for Nader and you had your second choice had been for Gore, then, you know, in a half a second, the computer would say, okay, that Nader vote now becomes a Gore vote. And, of course, Gore and Nader together would have swept the nation. It would have been the largest electoral victory in the history of the United States. And it also, you know, for the benefit of democracy, would have represented the will of the majority of people in the United States. Whereas the system that we have now, whenever a third party gets involved, very often ends up representing the will of the minority, as happened in the last election, as happened also in the Bill Clinton George Bush election, where Ross Perot played the spoiler on the Republican side, and Bill Clinton won without a pure majority. So, instant runoff voting is one possible remedy, but it's not in place yet. It's not completely in play yet. And we're going to have a couple of guests on in just a second. I'm not sure if they're up on the line yet or not, if either one of them is. But we're going to have a couple of guests on in a few minutes who are going to talk about this and the impact that this has on democracy in the United States and the consequences of this kind of an electoral system. Back, oh, I don't know, a couple months ago, I wrote a piece for CommonDreams.org, and I pointed out that here in Vermont, I'm broadcasting from the People's Republic of Vermont in the Green Mountains here. Republican Brian Doobie, this is the lieutenant governor race, Republican Brian Doobie won 41% of the vote. Democrat Peter Shumlin won 32%. And progressive Anthony Polina won 25%. So the progressives plus the Democrats had clearly more than 50% of the vote. They had almost 60% of the vote. But the Republican, with 41% of the vote, won the election and is now deconstructing a lot of the work that Howard Dean had done in this state. A lot of controversy here in Vermont right now. And this is the result of this interesting system that we have, this two-party system. Now, there are a lot of folks who realize that with a two-party system, there's this problem of when a third party comes in, it not working to the benefit of one of the two major parties. For example, there's an article from the Associated Press. This is yesterday's. It's Associated Press. And it says, limited self-government advocates have their eyes on Idaho or Montana or New Hampshire. Now, the folks that they're talking about are the Libertarian Party, the folks from the Libertarian Party. A movement called the Free State Project has represented 3,100 people who would help choose a candidate and move there in hopes of canceling laws against drugs, prostitution, guns, and other individual liberties while privatizing current state functions such as schools. And the project has identified 10 candidate states. What they're doing is they're saying, well, we're a minority party. We're going to go into 10 states, very small states, all states with populations of less than 1.5 million. Idaho, Montana, Alaska, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, New Hampshire, Maine, Delaware, and Vermont. And they're going to go into these states and put up candidates for the Libertarian Party, which is, you know, a variation on the right. Let me tell you the result of this, how the Republicans in some of these states have responded to this. It's fascinating. We'll get to it right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Sorry, your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline, how can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. Broadcasting from coast to coast, from the Arctic Ocean to the equator, this is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network and Sirius Satellite Channel 145, Sirius Left talk station, their talk channel. What happened with the Republicans when the Libertarians wanted to set up shop in some of these small states? Real quickly, in Idaho, Governor Kirk Kempthorne, a Republican governor, says he was sorry to hear that Idaho was on the list. And then Montana Governor Judy Martz, another Republican, said, Montana's a huge state that welcomes newcomers, but we encourage the free staters to take a closer look at Idaho. Idaho is more inviting, said Chuck Butler, a spokesman for the governor. So all these Republican governors are trying to send libertarians to other states because of this concern. Does this cut into this party? So we have two guests on the line, and we're going to be speaking with them in kind of an open dialogue here. Steve Grossman is the president of a fourth-generation business, Massachusetts Envelope Plus, a union shop for 52 years. He was the chairman of the Democratic National Committee from 1997 to 1999 and was a candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor of Massachusetts in 2002. And, Steve, are you on the line?
Tom, I'm right here. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, welcome. And our other guest is David Cobb. David Cobb serves as the general counsel for the Green Party of the United States and was the Green Party of Texas candidate for attorney general in 2002. David, are you here?
I'm here, Tom.
Hey, welcome to the show. Well, a couple of questions here. First, I want to ask Steve, and if we can kind of keep these questions and answers rather tight, at least until we get into the break at the bottom of the hour. We have news at 30 minutes after. Steve, how can the Democrats embrace the disenfranchised center and left, or why aren't the Democrats more aggressively doing this?
Well, I think Democrats make a mistake when they marginalize those people who would love to be part of the Democratic Party, but who either don't see the Democratic Party and its candidates standing up with passion and eloquence for a set of values and priorities that some of those in the more progressive part of the political spectrum used to associate with the Democratic Party. But having said that, I recognize the phenomenon that you described earlier, that when people decide to create alternative parties, third parties, which are perfectly legitimate within the political spectrum we all operate in. I mean, this is a free and democratic society. What often happens is that when we fragment and are divided and lack discipline, we wind up losing and we wind up with people in office whose values and priorities, whether you're Democrat or Green or anything else, fundamentally disagree with. So I think the Democratic Party, to regain the energy, the passion, the enthusiasm, and the commitment of those who have left it, has got to adopt a much more aggressive and fundamentally progressive point of view than it has over the past few years.
Okay, thank you, Steve. David, what are your thoughts on, we've got about a minute, and then we'll come back after the break. What are your thoughts on how the Democrats are reaching out to the Greens and what that position might be?
Well, Tom, unfortunately, I haven't seen any indication that, the Democrats are reaching out to the Greens at all. What I've seen is more corporate-sponsored and corporate-supported Democratic candidates winning the nomination, and then more Democrats yelling and screaming at Greens not to do what Steve has correctly identified to be our Democratic right, which is to form political parties. I would say that if we really believe in democracy, then we really have to have a commitment to multi-party democracy, and there are structural ways to do that, which I'd love to get into a conversation about how we can do after the break.
Yeah, in the first 15 minutes of the show here before we brought you guys on, I was explaining to people about how proportional representation works in many of the European countries, John Stuart Mill's idea of this stuff, and also instant runoff voting and what it is and how it works, and we can get back into that. So it sounds like you're not hearing a sense of reach out or outreach from the Democrats, David. We'll come back to this conversation. We'll carry this conversation on. We've got some great new questions in just a few minutes. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
So the sun is a-shining, the birds are a-chirping, and the garden is a-calling. One small problem, you're back.
Ow!
It's a-hurting. Can't bend down to dig.
Ooh!
Can't stand up to water.
Ouch!
Just can't bear the pain. Better grab a Thermacare. 8 hours of penetrating heat for powerful pain relief and deep muscle relaxation.
Ah!
So you can bend, dig, plant, water, and water all you want. No problem. Pick up a Thermacare and wrap yourself in relief.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. Three Chinese labor activists have been detained by the Chinese government as a delegation of U.S. diplomats and journalists tour China investigating the country's increased labor strife. The three were reportedly told to avoid contact with the U.S. delegation or suffer, quote, serious consequences. Meanwhile, two other labor activists remain in a Chinese prison more than 3 months after a state court conducted trials against them for subversion. They still await their verdicts.
28,000 apartment services workers in New York City are mulling over a tentative new contract today. Their union's bargaining team struck a deal in the early morning hours yesterday following talks that stretched past a midnight strike deadline. John Hamill of Service Employees Union Local 32BJ says the deal would improve the weekly salaries of workers in each of the contract's 3 years.
The average worker will get an $18 raise in the first year of the contract. That's starting at the 21st of this month. $19 a week in the second year of the contract. $20 a week in the third year of the contract. Combined with the benefits increases in terms of pension, annuities, health fund, etc., it comes to about a $90 a week package for each worker over the course of the 3 years.
The deal also secures a $10 copay for visits to the doctor. Mail-in ballots will allow all 28,000 union members to vote on the deal.
A three-day general strike is underway in Zimbabwe as unions protest the government's tripling of fuel prices. Most businesses in Zimbabwe are closed through tomorrow, but government offices remain open. So far, there has been no state violence, unlike last month's general strike where police randomly beat people both during and after the action. However, state security forces have stepped up patrols in the cities, and four trade union leaders were detained by police just before the strike began yesterday for passing out flyers.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We have David Cobb on, General Counsel of the Green Party of the United States and the Green Party of Texas candidate for Attorney General in 2002, and Steve Grossman, who was chairman of the Democratic National Committee from 1997 to 1999 and candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor of Massachusetts in 2002. David, we were talking about the Democrats reaching out to the Greens or not, and you said that you're not seeing that. Even in the absence of that, do you think that making a politically pure point is more important than stopping the neoconservative agenda?
No, I do not support running candidates or building a party just to make a point. I do support running an independent political party and creating an independent party in order to serve as the electoral arm for a growing democracy movement in this country, and I'm convinced that only an alternative party can do that.
How?
By the same way that the abolitionists did it, by the women suffragists did it, by the union organizer of another century, the way the populists did it, with painstaking grassroots organizing.
They all ended up integrating into and modifying the views of mainstream of one of the two mainstream parties at the time.
Well, of course, that's not entirely true. The Republican Party actually was a third party that actually took over the Whig Party.
The Whigs were already disintegrating.
Some might suggest that the Democrats are already disintegrating over issues of corporate managed trade and their rejection of their progressive base.
You know, Tom and David, something you said earlier, David, before the break, I just wanted to pick up on. You said Democrats continue to run corporate-funded candidates and don't reach out to the Greens. I think that the real issue here is the Democratic Party, or are there candidates within the Democratic Party who are reaching out to voters who have voted for Green candidates or who espouse a proud progressive agenda or tradition? The issues that Jill Stein, who was the Green Party candidate in Massachusetts, talked about involved health care and environmental justice and civil rights and civil liberties and pay equity and economic and social justice agenda. I mean, those are issues that arguably there are candidates running for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States not only have espoused during this campaign, but have espoused during their careers. I mean, I'll be up front and tell you quite proudly, I'm supporting Howard Dean for president. One of the reasons I think Howard Dean is doing a better job at creating a new democracy movement within his base and within this country is that he is reaching out to alienated voters, non-traditional voters, younger voters, voters who care deeply about health care and health care justice for all, as well as those who care deeply about an environment that will be here a long time after we're gone, and is rejecting policies that favor an oil policy that has brought us again and again into the Middle East to protect our sources of carbon fuel. So I don't think it's fair to say that there's nobody in the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is entirely bankrupt. I would reject that out of hand. I do agree with you that third parties can hold others honest and force parties like the Democratic Party to reexamine their values and their priorities and to do it either for defensive reasons or for whatever set of reasons. But
Steve, I don't want to speak on behalf of David, but I don't think that he's saying that the Democratic Party is corrupt. I'm seeing the same thing here
in
local politics, is that many of the Democratic candidates that are coming forward are bound to the Democratic Leadership Council, which just recently issued a news release saying that they thought that if Democrats wanted to win in 2004, they should behave more like historic Republicans, that they should become more conservative. I mean, this is a reality, isn't it?
But you can be demonstrably in favor of jobs, growth, and economic revitalization of this country and still hew to a progressive tradition. Those are not mutually exclusive. And I think the Democratic Party, if it's wise and wants to reach out to tens of millions of voters who have been alienated from the political process entirely, I mean, let's not forget that in the closest election of anybody's lifetime, the last election for president, Gore versus Bush, one out of every two voters in this country didn't vote. And I think the reason they didn't vote is that they thought the system was either bought and paid for by special interests, their votes didn't matter, or there wasn't enough difference between the two candidates to really matter.
Okay, Steve.
The problem is you wind up with an attorney general like John Ashcroft, who's tearing down the wall of civil liberties that we've spent generations building up, and that I don't think was ever intended by those who supported Ralph Nader in 2000.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I agree with many of your points. I'm wondering what David has to say about this. And David, also, I'm wondering about your concerns about the Democratic Leadership Council.
Well, I share your concerns, Tom. As you know, Al Fromm, the founder and CEO of the Democratic Leadership Council, has put out numerous press releases actually criticizing Al Gore for being, quote, too populist. And actually, as you said, correctly said that in order to win both in 2002 and 2004, that the Democrats must act more like Republicans, and they've got to reach out more and more to the right. Those are the words of the Democratic Leadership Council, of which, of course, Al Gore and Bill Clinton were members, Joe Lieberman, and many others on the Democratic Party were and are. But, you know, that's not really the issue, because I'm not a Democrat. There are lots and lots of people who are not Democrats but are still progressives, and we don't find a home in the Democratic Party. So what we have done is exercise our constitutional rights to come together and to assemble, and we are doing so with a strategy in mind of changing the country. If I thought it could be done within the Democratic Party, I would do it. But I see that the DLC controls that party apparatchik. The primary is so front-loaded that only a DLC-blessed candidate is going to come out of it. And if the Greens don't mobilize, then there will be no anti-war candidate. There will be no candidate who supports publicly funded elections. There will be no candidate supporting a living wage in 04.
David, in The Nation magazine, Ronnie Duggar, the fellow who introduced Ralph Nader in the 2000 election cycle in the 2002 in Los Angeles, I'm sorry, 1996 in Los Angeles and Denver in 2000, presented Ralph Nader to the Green Party conventions and nominated him. Ronnie is a good friend of Ralph's and played a big role in bringing Ralph forward. Wrote a column December 2, 2002, in which he said, "If Bush and the Pentagon control the government through 2008, we will become a militarized nation bent on world domination, a third millennium Rome. Intensified terrorist attacks on us and a series of widening wars can be expected." This was written last year. "All of this is dramatically worse in kind and degree than what Al Gore would have done as president. If we divide our votes for president again between the Democratic nominee and Ralph Nader, we will very probably help reelect Bush. Therefore, Nader should not run for president as a Green." How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, look, Ronnie Duggar is a personal friend of mine. I love Ronnie to death, and he comes out of a proud liberal tradition in Texas, and he's entitled to his opinion, and I'm glad that he's able to put it out there. It is a distinctly minority opinion amongst Green Party activists that's the right strategy to take, because we are in it to win it. This is a long-term movement. We're not. And think about this. I mean, every Green Party candidate and activist knows running for Congress or president that we're not likely to get elected to that office. Yet we consider winning whenever we're able to advance an agenda, build the infrastructure of the party without any corporate money whatsoever to create a new movement in this country.
But David, what if the country gets pulled out underneath us? What if the rug gets pulled out underneath us in the meantime? What if we end up in a situation where, you know, because of our military adventures abroad, there have been a number of really interesting speculations about this on, for example, commondreams.org, that some people are suggesting that the thing that this administration really wants is to stir up Islamic radicalism, to create more terrorist attacks, because the 9/11 attack was such a boon to the Republicans and to this administration. It was so helpful to them. And they're going to, so if they were to stir up more attacks domestically within the United States, that would give them a reason to crack down. And evoking the Emergency Powers Act, they could suspend elections. I mean, we could end up even without a democracy. Do we have the luxury of trying to build a third party and replace the Democrats, because that's really your only choice, right? I mean, in the absence of instant runoff voting.
I think, David, you know, clearly I would never in any way, shape, or form suggest that David and all of the people who have become part of the Green Party don't have an absolute right within this democracy we care so deeply about.
Oh, we all agree on that, Steve.
Okay, but when he said that my concerns, we don't find that there's any movement or any force in the Democratic Party that cares about public funding of elections, a living wage, that's anti-war, etc.
Oh, I didn't hear David say that.
I
know that that's not his position. We all agree that there are some very good progressive Democratic candidates, and there are some who are not.
But the point that he made was the Democratic Party is essentially in control of the DLC. The DLC rejects public funding, rejects some of these other concerns that he has. Therefore, we have no choice but to continue to organize as a grassroots party, and we'll do it as long as we have to do it to change America. And that essentially says there is no one within the Democratic Party who has the right positions and who takes a strong progressive approach to these positions. Therefore, we need to reject, because most of the people who were green, who were part of the Green Party at one time or another, were part of the Democratic Party. Whether they supported George McGovern.
So, Steve, are you suggesting that Howard Dean is the guy who could step forward and pick up the progressive mantle, or Dennis Kucinich, for example?
I'm suggesting that to say that the Democratic Party is in the control of any candidate or any candidate blessed by any organization is not accurate. I don't think it's clear that a DLC-funded or sponsored candidate is likely or is going to be the nominee of this party. And I think that if large numbers of Americans took a look at the Democratic Party's nine candidates, they would find in that group of nine a number of candidates who care deeply about public financing of campaigns, environmental justice, a living wage, who are anti-war, and
right.
who
so
are
what you're saying
deeply
is that the Democrats
about,
are covering a broad spectrum of point of view. You know, it's the old Will Rogers, you know, I don't belong to an organized political party, I'm a Democrat point. But, David,
we are going through, Tom, we are going through a period with the greatest degradation of environmental protections that we've seen in this country in the last 50 years is taking place right in front of our eyes, corporate-sponsored, corporate-funded as part of the Bush administration. And my concern is that if we have this continued fragmentation of progressives going off in Democratic directions or green directions or whatever directions, we are going
more
to virtually guarantee
Absolutely.
The re-election
Steve,
of
George Bush. Steve, a lot of those Democrats are also voting for and supporting the kinds of environmental degradation that you're talking about. I mean, you look at their voting records, and this isn't right across the board. So I'm wondering, David, how, if you think it's even possible, we're talking to David Cobb, the general counsel to the Green Party, and we're talking to Steve Grossman, who was the chairman of the Democratic National Committee from 97 to 99. David, I'm wondering if you have an idea of any way that it would be possible in perhaps some alternate universe, I don't know, that for the Greens, at least for the 2004 election, to become a pressure group within the Democratic Party and work with the Democrats to get Bush out of office, and then, you know, when the country has at least come closer to the center, even if you were to say that the current Democratic Party is right of center, it's not as right of center as Bush is,
sure.
And then split back out.
Well, sure, Tom, I do. I mean, for example, I would tell you right now that if the out of the Democratic Party nomination there was a candidate who would support full publicly funded elections, a living wage, and single-payer universal health care, not health insurance, but health care, and opposed war as a matter of foreign policy, that you would find scores of Greens not only voting for, but probably working for such a candidate. I mean, that's one of the things. But I don't control, and neither do the Greens control, the Democratic Party nominating process. So, you know, what I'm saying is that the Greens are not going away. We're getting larger, stronger, and better organized with every election cycle. There is a solution to the problem of the spoiler argument that is underlying all that we're talking about. Steve knows it. You know it. I know it. It's called instant runoff voting. Right. The Democrats that control state legislators could begin adopting it right away, or at least educating and talking about it, and then we could find ways to work together and agree to disagree on the issues where we do. I'm committed.
But we don't have instant runoff
democracy.
Voting right now, David.
I'm sorry?
We don't have instant runoff voting right now, so
no,
if
and we're not
the Greens
going to get it
play,
unless,
play the
if
role
the Green
spoiler.
Party doesn't continue. We're not going to get it if the Green Party sits on our hands.
I think you find plenty of Democrats willing to support instant runoff voting as a matter of principle because it is more democratic and brings many more citizens and their values into the political process. What I have a serious problem with is the fact that we've got an election right up in front of us, a little more than a year away. We've got a president in office that you as a Green leader and I as a Democratic leader and representing, let's say, on this conversation, millions of people are deeply concerned about where this country and the direction in which this country is going. And if we continue to exercise the lack of self-discipline that has unfortunately characterized the progressive movement over the past 10 or 15 years, we are going to continue to reelect people like George Bush because the Republican Party just is much better disciplined and understands that third parties within their own midst are hazardous to their health. They're not going to allow it. When we allow it, we lose. And I think the solution to advancing the progressive agenda is to have the progressive agenda and progressive leaders join, take back the Democratic Party in the same way conservatives grabbed control of the Republican Party after Goldwater's loss in 1964, both ideologically and politically. And then we can have a truly progressively dominated Democratic Party that does
speak to the
issues.
How does that happen? How does that happen? I mean, how does the Democratic Party become a force that Greens would want to participate in or vote for in the light of the DLC?
Because it becomes led by a candidate for president of the United States in 2004 who is nominated based on a progressive agenda that if not all Greens, I mean, David and I are never going to disagree on every issue. I'm never going to say war as an instrument of foreign policy is no longer valid because there will be occasions when I, even though I was opposed to the Iraq wars, was my candidate, will say we're going to have to go to war to protect
right.
our national
security. We've got to wrap this up, Steve. We've got to wrap it up.
But very simply put, if you nominate a progressive candidate who stands for many, if not all, of the things David talked about, then Greens and progressives can have the party back in the way we took the party back in 72. We fell short in nominating and electing George McGovern,
okay,
but we took control of that party. That was
Thank
a defining
Steve.
Moment for
David,
progressives. We can
David,
have it again.
You got time for about 3 seconds here, five seconds.
Anybody who wants to check out the Green Party, go to www.gp.org. And if you want to work on instant runoff voting, go to www.fairvote.org.
Okay, I'm going to hold you guys on during this break, and we'll come back after the break. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network.
The following conversation is real. It took place on March 7th, 2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Emergency, this is Stacy. Have you located KM Ranch Road?
Yes, I'm unhurt, but my truck is totaled. Could you call my wife?
After the Highway Patrol is contacted, I will conference you in with your wife.
Okay, thanks.
Sheriff's Office.
Yes, this is Stacy with OnStar. I have an accident with airbag deployment located on KM Ranch Road.
When you have OnStar, if your airbag deploys, an advisor receives a signal and calls to see if you need help. If no one answers, we'll locate you by satellite and send for emergency services.
Mr. Fuller, I have your wife on the line.
Are you okay?
I'm okay. I totaled the truck, I think.
Okay, babe, I'm coming to get you now.
OnStar is available on the Chevy Trailblazer. To learn more, visit your Chevy dealer or Chevy.com/Trailblazer.
Mr. Fuller, would you like me to stay on the line with you until your wife arrives?
No, I'll be fine, thanks. You know, OnStar is pretty good stuff, isn't it?
Well, thank you, sir. Please know we're here for you whenever you need us.
OnStar, always there. Always ready.
There are over 70 million Americans who suffer from arthritis. But for arthritis pain relief, there's only one Aleve, the medicine more and more doctors are recommending for all-day relief of pain. Doctors know Aleve can stop tough pain all day with fewer pills than Tylenol. And Aleve works right at the site of arthritis to provide fast, effective relief. Get relief doctors recommend. Aleve, arthritis pain relief that's all day strong, all day long. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain. Comparisons based on minimum 24-hour label dosing.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy of a generation. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Talk, and I'd like to introduce you to Swiss America, the company that's helping America to rediscover gold. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Swiss America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please, write this number down, 1-800-289-2646, which spells 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's BUYCOIN. Ask for a free copy of The New Gold Rush. It'll help you understand this emerging gold rush so you can stake your claim and tell them Christopher Kent told you to call.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Australia. About what you do to your animals Whale. And what your animals do to you. Seal. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer we'll all your animal Jack. Questions Zebra. From A to Z. Iguana. Sunday nights Cuda on Mundi. IE America Minx. Radio Narwhal. Network.
Austria. Right,
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bats.
Zebra.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. If you've been suffering from withdrawal because you can't find The Malloy Show, I've got the cure. Just remember this phrase, MM 9 p.m. That's right. Mike Malloy can now be heard weeknights from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. So turn off the reruns on TV and tune in to Mike for your nightly three-hour bedtime story. MM 9 p.m. Pleasant dreams.
From the
network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy. Now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Democracy is coming, hopefully. This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with David Cobb of the Green Party and Steve Grossman of the Democratic Party. And Steve and David, we have about 2.5 minutes here, and I did want to give each of you a minute to just wrap this up. I don't think that we did justice to that as we ran into this last segment, but please try to keep it short. David, first of all, the question that we have before us is, what is the most healthy for democracy way of dealing with the reality of how third parties affect the electoral process, and what you would like to see people doing in the United States to resolve the issues before us? You got a minute here, David.
Tom, Steve correctly, and I appreciate that he acknowledged that we all as Americans have the right to participate in our electoral process. We need to empower our system to allow us to actually exercise that. The way to do it is to enact proportional representation and instant runoff voting and other changes to the voting systems. Third parties and alternative viewpoints have always been with us. The two-party system is an antithesis to genuine democracy and participatory democracy, and the Green Party is not going away, and we encourage and want to work with other progressives to help us create the vibrant democracy we deserve.
That was marvelous. That was less than a minute. Steve, your comments.
And I would simply say that I'm less interested in empowering our system and more interested in empowering voters. I'm thinking about those young voters who have registered for the first time this year who need to find a candidate who champions their values. I'm thinking about members of organized labor who have not seen a progressive tradition in any political party for some time, the majors. While I fully recognize the value of third parties and the importance of the tradition of third parties, nevertheless, my concern is to make sure that we defeat George Bush in 2004. And I think the way to do that is to nominate a progressive candidate who stands proudly and passionately for a progressive agenda, and to empower and bring back millions of voters back into the Democratic Party. My candidate is Howard Dean. It's www.deanforamerica.com. I hope people will take a look, and I very much appreciate being with you today.
Thank you, Steve. And greens.org is the website for the Greens, right, David?
gp.org.
GT.org. Great. Thank you very much, David and Steve. This is
Thank you, Tom
Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Four more key members of Saddam Hussein's former regime in Iraq have now been collared by U.S. officials. Three of those men are portrayed in the deck of cards listing the 55 most wanted Iraqi leaders. The fourth man, though, an intelligence official captured by special forces during a raid in Baghdad. The man the Bush administration picked to head up Iraqi reconstruction efforts says today, quote, "We're going as fast as we can." Retired General Jay Garner says he has no calendar so far for initial efforts to transform Iraq into a functioning democracy. In a news conference earlier, he did say one of his first priorities will simply be to get people back to work in Iraq. He announced Iraqi ministries will start reopening by next week and will, in fact, be operated by Iraqis themselves. President Bush says the war against Iraq has been about making America more secure from global terrorists. In Canton, Ohio, earlier, the president said the war has also been about making sure Iraqis and other people around the globe know they can be free and decide their own fate.
We're bringing freedom to corners of the world that haven't seen freedom in generations. We stand strong on the principle that freedom belongs to everybody.
The president has made a stop in Ohio today to promote his latest economic stimulus proposal. He's pushing, of course, massive tax cuts as the best cure, at least in his opinion, for the ailing economy.
That if people have more money in their pocket, they will likely spend it or invest it, which is good for job growth.
The president called his proposal for a new round of aggressive tax cuts a, quote, jobs and growth package. He wants hundreds of billions of dollars in additional tax cuts, but there are still big differences between the two proposals approved by the Senate and House. And the U.S. military is now confirming it is, in fact, questioning soldiers about the alleged theft, a part of a multi-million dollar haul found in Baghdad. Central Command, however, declining to say just how many soldiers are being talked to. Members of the 3rd U.S. Infantry Division stumbled on a total of more than $650 million.
Cheapo.
Penny Pincher.
Coupon Charlie.
Sure, they're just names, but they hurt.
Ouch.
And there's a place that understands. A place called Hotwire.com. We won't call you things like
belt tightener.
Oh, no. Hotwire will help you embrace your frugal side with the lowest hotel prices guaranteed, or we'll give you double the difference. Does that sound like someone who'd call you a
tightwad?
Nope. The only thing we'll call you is our kind of customer. Oh, and cheapskate.
Hotwire.com. Fly, sleep, drive. Cheap.
I may be pregnant, but my period stays away.
I want to know.
With First Response Early Result Pregnancy Test, used as directed, she could get results up to 4 days sooner than other leading brands. And now, results are even clearer with an easy-read result wine.
I want to know now.
First Response. Results 4 days sooner.
See doctor as recommended. 52% get results 4 days sooner. 86% 2 days sooner. Use as directed.
Secretary of State Colin Powell says talks between the United States, North Korea, and China over North Korea's suspected nuclear programs have now ended in Beijing. During a speech earlier today in Washington, D.C., though, the secretary tried to downplay international speculation. Those talks did not go very well. He said diplomats from all three sides will, quote, return to their capitals, assess what they heard, analyze proposals, and determine where we will go next. North Korea's recent rhetoric and apparent resumption of nuclear weapons programs have raised serious concerns about that possibility around the world.
This is the house that Jack built.
Daddy, faster!
The tree house. These are the 12 planks of wood Jack carried. The 200 nails he hammered. The broken ladder he climbed. And this is the back pain and the neck pain Jack had until he tried Thermacare. 8 hours of penetrating heat for powerful pain relief and deep muscle relaxation. Because after he built the house...
What about the curtains?
Jack had to decorate. Pick up a Thermacare and wrap yourself in relief.
The militant Palestinian leader is claiming today's earlier suicide attack in Israel was in fact a joint operation by groups tied to the main Fatah faction, as well as the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Israeli spokesman Dory Gold, though, says the country has been getting threats of these attacks for some time.
It's our hope now
that any new Palestinian government that will be sworn in next week will take make a determined effort on the ground to make sure that no more attacks of this sort are attempted.
Israeli security forces identified the bomber as an 18-year-old from a refugee camp near the West Bank city of Nablus. There has so far been no official claim of responsibility in the attack that killed an Israeli security guard at the entrance to the Kfar Saba train station. The Palestinian militant, though, says the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, an armed offshoot of Yasser Arafat's Fatah movement, and the Abu Ali Mustafa Brigades, which are linked to the PFLP, were both behind that bombing. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Life in a fishbowl. No, not in an aquarium. The behaviors of these specimens were observed while they were driving their cars. When we come back, I'll tell you what you've been doing on the road.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Stretch limos with tinted windows aside. What we do while driving is on display for everyone to see. And according to an Exxon poll of 1,000 drivers, our top three favorite activities are 1 in 5 of us flirt with other drivers. Another 40% actually reach out and touch someone with our cell phones. And the number one private activity that 70% of us perform for public view is the ever-popular eating. Now that gives dining and dashing a whole new meaning. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hey, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program. You have been listening to it for the last hour, and you will be listening to it for the next hour. We're here broadcasting from coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations on the Sirius satellite, channel 145, Sirius Left. Standard equipment in Chrysler, Ford, BMW, Mercedes, Jaguar, a whole bunch of different cars, and a few trucks out there. And streaming live on the Internet from ieamericaradio.com. We're going to start a regular segment on Thursdays, a thing a little different than our normal talk about politics and democracy. And we're going to explore some of the things that you absolutely, definitely won't be reading about in the mainstream news, but I think, you know, are significant and credible, worth exploring. So we are now going to begin looking into the possibility that everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Char. Can we pop down that background music? Thanks. And so we have on the line here Rachel Verdon. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Rachel, are you with us?
Yes, good morning, or good afternoon. You're on the East Coast.
Well, but we're broadcasting all over the place. We've got folks in Alaska listening, and Hawaii, and the West Coast, and Santa Fe. And anyway, your bio suggests that you're a victim of Lyme disease since early childhood, that you began your investigations into the origin of this after learning of numerous bizarre deaths of your Connecticut neighbors, and you're the author of a book called Lyme Disease and the SS Elbrus, collaboration between the Nazis and communists in chemical and biological warfare. This is a fascinating stuff, Rachel. Tell us first of all, what is Lyme disease?
Well, let's see. It's a tick-borne disease. It's a spirochete bacteria, which mostly is carried by rodents. They're the prime host. Rats, mice, okay? And other animals carry it too, but it's not permanent with them. They get over the disease, and the ticks actually become immunized, like the bigger animals, the deer, the moose, things like that. And birds will pick up the ticks, but they actually lose the ticks, and they too eventually become immunized. So by actually sucking the blood that has antibodies from larger animals. But rodents are chronic carriers. So it's worth noting that 44% of all the Lyme disease cases in America are inside New York City, which does not have herds of deer running through it.
44% of all Lyme disease cases are inside. Is this from rats, from rodents? Is this like the way the Black Death was carried in Europe in the 14th century?
Yes. Yeah, you got it. In fact, the Department of the Interior was called in to kill the rats just after World War II in New York. They had rat wars. And other major cities also.
Wars against the rats.
Yes. Yes.
Remarkable.
Most of the cases of Lyme disease are on the East Coast, approximately between Boston, New York, and Philadelphia.
Right.
And then there's three other little patches, and they're also at port sites, which is significant, lend-lease port sites from World War II. There's one up in Duluth, Minnesota, on the Great Lakes, which was involved with grain shipping. There's another one down between Port Arthur and Louisiana's New Orleans on the Gulf, again, which was involved with lend-lease shipping, with cattle and grain. Coming down the Mississippi. And then the fourth center is between Portland and San Francisco. Again, lend-lease shipping sites during World War II.
And this is interesting. This would indicate that this disease came in at our ports. You're suggesting it came in from outside the United States, and that's why it's largely focalized or centralized in these areas?
Yes. Yes, that's what caused me to look outside of the country. And I discovered that the old name for Lyme disease was relapsing fever. And there were huge epidemics of relapsing fever, both tick and louse-borne, that were pouring out of the Soviet Union at the end of World War II. And the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, the UNRRA, put out ship quarantines and all kinds of things. So I got into the National Archives Civil Reference Branch records on Soviet shipping, and voila, there appeared the SS Elbrus, an American Liberty ship, which was originally named the U.S. Or the SS Muir Woods, and the Soviet Union changed and christened it to the SS Elbrus, named after the highest peak in the Caucasus Mountains, and it was loaded up with 426 tons of furs, and it arrived in Philadelphia January 6, 1946, and it was followed by the SS Suchan with 500 tons, and the SS Vilnius with 450 tons of furs and wool. And
presumably carrying rats or parasites that carry this bacteria.
The ticks can live up to a year without feeding. So, and after that, all hell broke out in the port cities. Then the problem is, my whole book is written on connect the dots with circumstantial evidence. And the evidence is very, very strong. But every time I came close to finding a record that said, yes, these furs were infested and they started these epidemics, they were classified, solidly blacked out on these Freedom of Information requests. And I have five file cabinets full of these declassified records. And the government has stonewalled me up to 12 years on even responding to these requests or to the appeals.
This has
been
remarkable.
A royal battle.
So, Rachel Verdon is our guest here on the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. She's the author of Lyme Disease and the SS Elbrus. And, Rachel, you're suggesting that these things came into the United States right after World War II, that they followed this the furs, they carried ticks which brought Lyme disease into the United States, and that this followed these relapsing fever epidemics in Europe. In your book, you suggest that this had to do with Nazi or Communist Party biological warfare experiments?
Yes. Oh, they weren't just
okay.
Experiments. This
we
is
have
incredible.
About 4 minutes here.
Okay. The whole history of the Soviet Union's biological warfare on their own citizens began to emerge in the intelligence files at the National Archives, the OACSI files, which is Office of the Army Chief of Staff of Intelligence, which I had declassified. They were in an underground city in Suitland, Maryland. It's a 20-acre underground city, and many of these files have no indexes. But I got hold of these through an intelligence officer named John Loftus, who had been granted permission to go down there, and he tipped me off and said, hey, check these out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So these records expose a very extensive collaboration between Germany and the Soviet Union before World War II, during World War II, and after in the development of pesticides, biological warfare, and poison gases. And they all go hand in hand. IG Farben.
So, Rachel, are you suggesting that this the bacteria, the spirochetal, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, bacteria that produces Lyme disease, is the result of a biological warfare experiment? In other words, was it created or mutated in the laboratory, or was it simply a natural agent that has been around for a long time in Europe that they began experimenting with, they amplified it somehow, and that's how it reached the United States in 1946 on these ships full of furs?
It's natural. Let me see if I can explain. They developed these pesticides to kill the vermin in wool, in the textile industry, IG Farben. And they went into Russia. There were huge factories of IG
Farben
in
the company,
Russia.
IG Farben is the company that made Zyklon gas, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right.
That they used in the gas
But all this stuff developed out of pesticides, and then they went into weapons.
Right.
They originally began in the textile industry. But they were very deeply involved in the Soviet Union, and so was the German Army Chemical and Biological Warfare Unit, the Waffenproof 9, which began there in 1928. So this history is uncovered in the book. And what happened was that the Central Asian republics in the Soviet Union, which were basically tribesmen of, you know, Muslim, Mongolian, okay, across the tundra there, they revolted. They hated communism. They refused collectivization. And they were sitting on top of all that oil. So Stalin built all these biological and chemical warfare factories, and he tested out IG Farben's secret poison gas weapons, Tabin, Sarin, Solman, eventually, on the tribesmen, and he let loose these hordes and hordes of rats that were infected with relapsing fever, the old name for it, which included Lyme back then, and typhus, and encephalitis, and brucellosis, and plague, and, oh my God, the list went on and on. I mean, everything they could, you know, drag off the tundra, they cooked up and they, you know, multiplied with these rats and then set them loose. Now, this was not phage research where they mutated a particular bacteria. These were natural bacteria that were already indigenous to the Soviet Union.
Okay, so you're suggesting then that these, that the natural bacteria that we now know as Lyme disease had been hanging out there for a long, long time, thousands of years, maybe longer, and they amplified that and created experiments. Rachel, thanks so much for being on our program today. I really appreciate your joining us. Rachel Verdon, her book is Lyme Disease and the SS Elbrus. And I'm sure you can find it on Amazon or order it from your local bookstore. Thanks again, Rachel, for being on the show. We'll be back after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The following conversation is real. It took place on March 11th, 2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Center, this is Michael. How may I help you?
Hi. My wife just called and said the car is running and the baby is inside. I was just hoping that you guys could unlock.
Okay, no problem, sir. Phone number, area code first.
281.
When you have OnStar, an advisor can send a signal to unlock your doors, even if you're 1,000 miles away.
Do you know if it's parked in the open?
I do not know. I've got my wife in with conference room.
Okay,
hello?
Yeah. All right. Is the vehicle parked in the open?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. How old is the baby inside?
He's 9 months.
OnStar is available on the Chevy Trailblazer. To learn more, visit your Chevy dealer or Chevy.com/Trailblazer.
I am showing the vehicles unlocked if you'd like to check it out.
Yay! You're the best. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And what's your name, sir?
My name is Michael.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome, and I'm glad
you're a lifesaver.
Well, we appreciate having you all as our subscribers.
So do we after today.
OnStar, always there, always ready.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying greens.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont out here in the mountains where it was snowing today, of all things. We're broadcasting from coast to coast on the Sirius satellite, on terrestrial radio stations, and streaming live on the Internet across the world. Rachel Verdon was our guest in the first 20 minutes of the show here, and she's the author of this book, Lyme Disease and the SS Elbrus, and she had a question she wanted to share with our listeners, and I'm going to bring her back in just a second to ask that question, and then we've got to go to another break at the bottom of the hour for the news. And I wanted to let you know also that right after the news, we've got this question: is the Republican Party imploding? I've got some really interesting stuff in today's news, but also I'd be pleased to take your calls. In fact, it would be great to hear from you right after the bottom of the hour. The number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And in about 6 or 7 minutes here, we'll be all set to take your calls. So, Rachel, are you still with us here?
Yes. Yeah.
Welcome back.
Okay.
Tell me about Joseph Mengele, and also tell me about the guy on the cover of your book.
Okay. We need the public's help to identify the photograph on the cover of the book. Henry Tolkmuth, an IG Farben poison gas scientist, went into the Soviet Union before and after the war to work at Bekatovka, the poison gas and biological warfare company. And then he was smuggled, theoretically, back out. But I believe he died at Bekatovka, and Joseph Mengele switched identities with him, the death angel of Auschwitz,
right,
and came to work
actually,
at Dow Chemical. He came to work. And Joseph Mengele's expertise was not only poison gases, but also Lyme disease and multiple sclerosis. And Lyme is a component of MS. And I want the public to help identify this photograph. The man died, whoever he was, Tolkmuth or Mengele, on December 13, 1995, after the local police in Florida visited his home where he had retired, and they were so alarmed at his suspicious behavior, he actually denied the photographs from his own dossier, the military records, were of himself. And the policeman was so alarmed, he had the Salt Lake City police fetch me from work and call him immediately and send him everything I had. And both of us approached the Justice Department's Nazi hunting unit, the OSI, and they told us, case closed, too bad.
That's remarkable. Rachel, is the cover of your book any place on the Internet where people can see it if they don't have a copy of the book? Is it on Amazon.com, for example? Does it show the
cover?
Yes,
it's on Amazon.com, and they can also get hold of the book through any bookstore, Barnes & Noble. It's, you know, Ingram & Taylor, the distributor, carries it. And also my publisher, 800-431-1579. And they can order it directly that way.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much, Rachel. I appreciate your being on the show. Rachel Verdon, the author of Lyme Disease and the SS Elbrus, and her hypothesis on our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, that Joseph Mengele snuck into the United States and came to work as a chemist, working with Lyme disease and some of these other conditions, and that Lyme disease came over here on these ships in the 40s as a result of Stalin's and the Nazis' experiments, particularly Stalin's, with biological warfare, using their own people as guinea pigs, of all things. Pretty grim story there. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. In the next segment, we're going to be talking about, are the Republicans imploding? Is the Republican Party starting, you know, are the cracks starting to show? This party has been very, very tightly disciplined. And now it's either they're going to really crack down on their own, or we may see another Jim Jeffords sort of incident here. So, some interesting stuff. And also, feel free to call 1-800-TALK-YES. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
This May, Aleve invites you to join us in the fight against arthritis, the country's number one cause of disability. That's when Aleve will partner with the Arthritis Foundation to sponsor the annual Arthritis Walk. When you join the walk, you'll help Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation in their efforts to control, prevent, and cure this crippling disease that affects one in every three Americans. For more on the Arthritis Walk and Aleve's all-day arthritis relief, go to Aleve.com and join the team to fight arthritis. Use Aleve as directed.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Conditions in the Pacific Ocean might have given rise to droughts that hit Atlanta and Afghanistan. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. La Niña is the name given to a periodic cooling of surface waters in the eastern Pacific Ocean, and climate researchers are finding that it can produce widespread drought that happened during a four-year period that only recently came to an end. Martin Herling is a meteorologist with the federal government's Climate Diagnostic Center in Boulder, Colorado. He and his colleagues studied conditions in the tropical oceans between 1998 and 2002. Herling says unusual conditions in the Pacific and Indian Oceans had consequences that circled the globe.
What we noticed in our analysis to begin with was that during this four-year period, there were some very unusual, if not unprecedented, conditions in the oceans. We had about a four-year run of cold conditions in the eastern tropical Pacific. At the same time that it was cold in the eastern part of the Pacific Ocean, it was unusually warm in the western Pacific and in the Indian Ocean.
Herling says this combination was remarkable. Cold waters of La Niña over the eastern Pacific, and at the same time, warm water over the western Pacific and Indian Oceans. He says most of those tropical waters cool during La Niña events. The unusual coincidence had a powerful impact on climate in the mid-latitudes, and the result was widespread drought. A recent switch to El Niño conditions in the eastern Pacific started to end the drought last fall. The temperatures in the western Pacific and Indian Oceans during the drought period were unprecedented in terms of their warmth. Researchers say those temperatures are consistent with predictions of the impact of global warming, and they might rise more during the 21st century. Herling says in that case, it's only a matter of time before La Niña returns and recreates the conditions for yet another widespread drought. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, everybody, gather round. It's the privacy song. I don't have no privacy, neither do you. The government is watching us, and Walmart's watching too. Your doctor keeps your urine for to clone your
privacy song. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. I love that song. We have some interesting stories here, and if you'd like to comment on our first segment with David Cobb and Steve Grossman of the Greens and the Democrats, or pretty much anything else. And also just to feel free to call us at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And also, just to let you know, our setup for the week, on Friday, tomorrow, we're going to have a recap of the week. We'll be going over the updates on things that have happened through the week. For example, in today's New Scientist, which is this extraordinary publication that comes out of England, in today's New Scientist, it's a weekly, my copy just arrived this morning, there's an amazing story about depleted uranium and its radiation dangers and you know, raising all these new questions. We talked about this a couple of days ago. We also have, no need to go through it all, but anyhow, we'll be recapping the stories of the week, bringing you up to date on what's happening with them, and pretty much opening the lines all through the whole 2 hours, no guests, tomorrow to have conversation with you. So, in fact, we have Tim from Hartford, Connecticut. Tim, come on in. Welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be here. And of course, I've enjoyed your show all week long.
Thank you, Tim.
I just called up about the Greens versus the Democrats. You know, it's such an interesting premise that the idea that Mr. Grossman is floating out there that somehow or another the Democrats are going to be real nice to the Greens and try to invite us back into the party, when in all reality, they've done everything they can to blame us for everything that happened in the 2000 election. Just shut us out of all sorts of process. They certainly shut out Nader in the debate process, and I don't hear them, you know, clamoring, saying that the next debates aren't going to be sponsored by large corporations and the people on the debate commission are going to be nonpartisan instead of just Democrats versus Republicans. So this, yeah, you know, this phony idea that, you know, the Democrats are going to be all nice to us, when just about a week or two ago I heard Congresswoman Holmes from the D.C. just blasting the Green Party, blaming everybody for the election for the past. They're not really ready to get over that past election. So when is this kind of healing process going to begin?
Well, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for Steve Grossman, but my understanding of what he was suggesting was that there are a couple of progressive candidates, specifically Howard Dean and Dennis Kucinich, and some, you know, John Kerry's kind of trying to cast himself in that mold, although personally, I'm a little skeptical, but in any case, that there's at least a couple of progressive candidates or candidates who embrace many of the same values that the Greens do, and I don't think he was presuming to speak for the Democratic Party. I think he was just saying that he felt that the Democrats might, you know, if the Democratic Party puts forward a progressive candidate, then he's expecting that many Greens would step forward to embrace that candidate. The question in my mind is, will they do it? But the big question, Tim, that I'm curious about your thoughts on is how, in a system like we have in the United States, where we do not have proportional representation like most European countries do, or many South American democracies, and we don't have instant runoff voting like the Australians do, how do we accommodate the reality that a third party like the Greens are going to, in effect, re-elect George Bush in 2004 if they play a major role in the election campaign?
Well, if you're talking about some sort of deal with the Democrats and you know, trying to make an offer and stuff, I simply don't see it in the working. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, as much as people are pulling their hair out, Clinton was a horrible president who did all sorts of horrible things, which is the reason I left. I'm not willing to go back to the Clinton days. I think we have to
vote. Yeah, he brought us the WTO and GATT and NAFTA and the whole bit.
Well, one of the very first things he did in office was essentially, you know, he campaigned for gay rights and then, you know, screwed over the gays with the don't ask, don't tell policy. He's been a horrible, you know, candidate for president. But I think
Tim, with all of Clinton's failings, do you think he was anywhere near as destructive to our environment or our democracy as this current administration is being?
Well, it's a matter of degree. It's like, you know, do you want to be punched in the face or do you want to be punched below the belt? I mean, it's kind of a if and or. I mean, certainly on the long-term process of globally with NAFTA and GATT, he's going to do much more damage as a Democrat. I mean, it is a matter of degree. You know, it's like what Nader said also. These ideas out there of national health care, I mean, single payer, all that stuff is out there for the Democrats to steal and start campaigning and bring our numbers down. But I don't see that. I see local elections especially. We've elected 170-some people, and mayors and city council people and on that we're going to build. It's not going to be an overnight process.
Yeah,
as far
as
starting this thing. And the Republican Party was the start of a third party with Abraham Lincoln. I mean, that was a tremendous thing, and it may have to take that kind of thing.
Read the history of the early 19th century. The Republican Party didn't start out as a competitor against the Whigs. The Republican Party rose out of the ashes of the Whigs. The Whigs had essentially imploded. I mean, they were gone. Tim, thank you very much for calling and for making that point. We got a couple other callers on the line here, so I want to move along. Dave from Birmingham wants to talk about Greens and Democrats. Morning, Dave, or good afternoon.
Good morning, Tom. Morning here, afternoon where you are.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, Bellingham. I'm sorry. I need to amp up my glasses here.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to mention some of the things that Steve Grossman had talked about, especially in regards to, you know, the Democratic feeling, or kind of the feeling within the Democratic Party in general, you know, as the Greens are fragmenting the vote. And, you know, I think that's somewhat disingenuous to make that point when you look at the fact that neither the Democrats nor the Republicans are capable of actually getting more than 20% of the vote. There's, you know, another 60% of the vote, you know, the potential electorate out there that didn't vote at all.
Right.
And so when you start looking at, you know, progressive candidates and what they're doing, especially, you know, people like Howard Dean, who I really feel is more a wolf in sheep's clothing than anything else, that, you know, when they try to talk about progressive values and directly touching on one of the things that Steve had said, that they're still, you know, looking at growth as a progressive issue. And that's where, you know, so many of the Greens really part ways with some of the core, you know, Democratic platform, is that growth is not progressive.
Right. Greens are more interested in homeostasis.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
So that part of it is, you know, once again, just, you know, somewhat disingenuous, because we have growth, then, you know, as soon as you look at that and any other, you know, get into depth on that, and that's definitely anti-environmental. I mean, they can't really have both.
Yeah, arguably. I mean, you know, Julian Simon, who I am no fan of, he was the poster boy for the Greenspan wing of the Republican Party for many, many years. Julian Simon wrote a book. I can't remember the title right now, and he just died a year or two ago. But his premise was that there is something beyond the physical resources, and that's intellectual resource. That is that we can grow, we can expand capacity and capability without increasing the net use of resources by simply increasing our efficiencies. That it is possible for us to have, you know, whatever. I mean, you fill in the blank, faster computers, more efficient cars, whatever. Clearly, all of these things are going to hit a wall. I wrote a book called Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight that goes into, you know, exhaustive detail about how we're running out of oil and we're gonna run flat, full face into a wall within the next 20 to 30 years if we don't do something right away. But in any case, I think that the idea that we can do things better could be framed as a growth argument that could be acceptable or palatable to the Greens. But I want to also suggest to you that I'm not taking a partisan position here, but I live in Vermont, and I've lived here in Vermont for 7 years and have watched Howard Dean. In fact, I live in the capital of Vermont. And I don't think he's a wolf in sheep's clothing. I think he's exactly what he says he is, whatever that may be. I mean, you know, my experience of Howard Dean here in Vermont is that he just speaks his mind, and it has made him very unpopular with some people. It's made him very popular with many people, but he is not a weasel politician, in my opinion. And I've been watching him, you know, day after day for the last 7 years. So just for what it's worth, I mean, you know, I may be wrong, but I don't think he's a bad guy. There are a lot of his positions that I don't agree with, but I just think it's important to put that out. So anyhow, thank you for calling, Dave. We've got Jeff from Dallas, Texas on the line. Jeff, you wanted to talk about the Greens and the Dems.
Well, how are you, Tom?
I'm well. How are you, Jeff?
Well, fine.
Is this Jeff of Radio Left?
Yes.
Hey, I was on your show.
You introduced me to wheatgrass. I'm growing it myself now.
Oh, that's wonderful. For our listeners, Jeff runs a radio program, Radio Left, on the net. And I was down in Dallas some 6 months ago or so promoting Unequal Protection, my new book. And you had me on your show, and I came over to your apartment, and you made lunch for me. It was very nice. And we went out and got some wheatgrass juice. So tell us about Greens and Democrats. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think it's very simple. First of all, the Democrats are absolutely livid at the Greens making the claim that there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans.
Sure, and justifiably so, I think.
When I hear that, those are fighting words. I'm basically a pacifist, but I want to kick the people in the groin and knock them down and stomp on their faces. Because being compared to a Republican is about the most vile thing you could possibly say. It's like calling someone a Nazi, in my opinion.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. And Greens do not understand how visceral that reaction is when they say we're the same as Republicans. That's
yeah. So you're representing yourself, Jeff, as a Democrat, not as a Green.
That's right.
Okay. I didn't know that distinction. Okay.
Right.
So continue.
Then the second thing is, the Greens are doing very well by getting people elected at the local level. And by getting people elected at the local level, that's where they can impact things like voter reform in local areas and so on, and where they can build up a repertoire or a stable of qualified people who have held elective office, have been elected as Greens, and can run for higher office as Greens.
Right.
And that makes great sense to me. What doesn't make very much sense to me is this attitude, well, I can't compromise my values, so I have to vote for the best candidate, and if that makes some right-wing jerk like George Bush win, well, that's just too bad, because at least I didn't compromise my values.
Yeah. And, you know, Jeff, there's in psychology, there's this real interesting notion that came out of the work of Carl Jung in the last century that you'll find in the Myers-Briggs test. The last of the four letters in Myers-Briggs is a J or P, and it's whether a person is a judger or a perceiver. And according to the work that's been done based on Jung's insights, about 25 to 35% of the population are what are called judgers. That is, they see the world in absolutely black or white terms. It's all or nothing. It's our way or their way, and there's nothing in between. And about 70% of the people in the United States, or in the world, you know, just 70% of people, are what Carl Jung called perceivers. And they see this broad spectrum of gray. They see the polar opposites, the extremes on both ends, but they also see all the stuff in between. And they're the ones who are more likely to say, well, let's compromise, let's work things out. But the judgers won't do that. They have to either win or lose, whereas the perceivers will try to work towards situations where we can all win or we can at least have a compromise. And it seems to me, and I may be real wrong about this, but it seems to me that on the right and on the left in the United States, we find the what we might call extreme positions, and I don't mean that as a pejorative. I don't mean that negatively. I mean just, you know, the people who are pushing the boundaries of those political positions. We find people who are classic judgers, you know, in a Jungian psychological sense. And in the middle, we find a lot of perceivers, and I think average voters are perceivers. And I think that may explain that phenomena that you just identified, Jeff, from Dallas.
I think you're correct. And seeing the problem with it, though, is that what the Greens fail to realize is when they say, well, just let George Bush get elected, you know, maybe when it gets bad enough, then people will wake up. But it's welfare mothers who are losing income. It's children who are losing, poor children who are losing health insurance. It's gay people who are losing civil rights. It's black people who are being attacked and losing affirmative action so they can't get into universities. And the Green Party is primarily heterosexual, Christian, middle class, white people who are saying, well, I just can't sacrifice my integrity. So you just have to understand that if it gets really bad for you and you get turned into a lampshade by the Nazis, well, maybe that's the price we have to pay in order to change something. And I think that's a very selfish attitude.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going quite that far, but I agree with you that the trend lines are moving in those directions. I was looking at the paper this morning, and just get your quick thought on this, Jeff, and then we've got to go on to another caller. Rick Santorum and his comments about specifically homosexuality and associating it with all these very bizarre things. And Howard Dean, I read the USA Today, the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal, and none of them quoted Howard Dean on this. I got this out of the local Vermont newspaper. Quote, "The deafening silence of President Bush and his party has become inexcusable," Dean said. He called on Santorum to step down from his leadership position in the Senate. Quote, "Gay bashing is not a legitimate public policy discussion. It is immoral. Rick Santorum's failure to recognize that attacking people because of who they are makes him unfit for leadership position in the United States Senate," Dean said. By refusing to stand up for gay Americans under attack by members of his own party, this president sends a message that bigotry is acceptable. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Show.
Daddy, read me a story.
Sure thing, kiddo. Just let me turn on this light. Huh, the TV. That's weird. Vacuum.
Daddy, I'm scared.
Don't be scared, pumpkin. Just a little rewiring mix-up is all.
Jumping chimneys. Get down. Run.
Need a little rewiring help? Then come into Ace. We've seen it all and we know how to fix it. It's why people have been counting on us for products and advice for more than 75 years. Ace, the helpful place.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man. I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
When we bought this house, I really loved all the open space nearby.
Me too.
Too bad our real estate agent never mentioned what they had planned for that space.
Four!
Yeah, too bad.
Want to find the right real estate agent for you? Come to LendingTree.com. We'll personally match you with a LendingTree certified real estate agent, provide access to home listings, even a $1,000 gift card. Call 1-800-555-TREE or click on LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, "At a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore"? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, "To people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Oh.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. If you've been suffering from withdrawal because you can't find The Malloy Show, I've got the cure. Just remember this phrase, MM 9 p.m. That's right. Mike Malloy can now be heard weeknights from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. So turn off the reruns on TV and tune in to Mike for your nightly three-hour bedtime story. MM 9 p.m. Pleasant dreams. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Today's Wall Street Journal, an interesting op-ed piece in Politics and People by Albert R. Hunt, titled A Loose Cannon. And this raises the question that I brought up at the very beginning of the program. Is the Republican Party beginning to implode? We see this, the cracks beginning. Here, Rick Santorum has gone off his rocker and is running around. Now he's trying to backpedal from his gay bashing comments by implying that somehow the laws should be thrown open to all sorts of activity that I don't think other Republicans would agree with anyway. And, you know, polygamy and whatnot. And although, well, you know, I don't know, some of those Utah Republicans, maybe they would. And then we've got, anyhow, in the Wall Street Journal today, probably some of the Utah Democrats as well. Let's be fair. We have in the Wall Street Journal today on the op-ed page, a loose cannon. Newt Gingrich, a historian by training, has always been a revisionist, they write, or Albert R. Hunt writes. He says, and I quote, "Family values were a staple of Gingrich's successful Republican Revolution, even though he gave his first wife her walking papers the day after she got out of cancer surgery. He launched the impeachment of Bill Clinton for lying about sex while the remarried speaker was carrying on an affair with a staffer. He made his initial splash with devastating attacks on the ethics of top Democrats and then became himself an ethical leper." And they go on to talk about how he left office in 1999 in disgrace, but his pal Rummy put Mr. Gingrich on the Defense Policy Board and kind of rehabilitated him. And, of course, Fox News is now working very aggressively the article in the Wall Street Journal says he fancies himself and pretends he played an important role in the national security decisions, a role that eluded participants, as is his custody, distorted facts and history. They're talking about this battle between Rumsfeld and Powell, or this apparent battle. Newt Gingrich is really only an incidental irrelevancy in the battle between these folks, the most intense and high-stakes intra-administration power struggle since World War II. Amazing stuff going on in the Republican Party. The Democratic Party, of course, has got its own struggles. Who's going to be president or the presidential candidate? We'll be back tomorrow. Open lines. We'll be talking about all the things we've covered during the week on the Tom Hartman Radio Program here on the IE America Radio Network.